Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Niler 9 podcast. On this episode, myself and Andrea are going to be joined by Louise Bruton, one of our favourite guests to come on the show. And of course, when Louise is around, there's always a good chance we'll be talking about pop music of some kind of form. And we've got a very particular, a juicy episode, I guess, this week, because we're talking about the Britney Spears autobiography, which is called The Woman in Me. We have all listened or read it in the last couple of weeks, and there's been a lot of things that came out of it. It's basically Britney Spears, in her own words, for the first time ever. Here's a woman who's been through so many different things, from a conservatorship where she didn't have control of her own life to different breakups and different, basically a lot of the book is actually about the conservatorship and how her family have controlled her life and all of the horrible things she's been through. And it is a fascinating listen and read. It's the audiobook is read by Michelle Williams.
Very well read by her. Yeah. I thought she was excellent.
She has the gravitas required, but and also she just does. Really interesting, like, to hear from someone like Britney, as we'll discuss with Louise on this episode, you know, from someone who, you know, we talked about this in terms of conspiracy theories around Free Britney and all this kind of stuff and how she was actually fine, or she was sending coded messages to people. A lot of it was true. A lot of it seems to be true. Yeah. And in fair play to her for actually getting this far as of, what, she's 42 now or something? Like, she is picking up the pieces of her life and coming back and trying to live despite all the hardship. So I think we're going to talk about what we learned from the book, and maybe you have read it, maybe you've listened to it. And if not, maybe we can kind of give you the cliff notes of what's happened as well. So yeah.
And encourage you to read it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So our guest, Louise Bruton, actually is doing a Britney Spears night in Wigwam in Dublin on December 15th as well. She's such a big fan, so do check that out. And also she's doing a night for Gaza as well. Both of those, I think, events in Wigwam. Her and our previous guest, actually, our Swiftageddon guest, Anna Jacob, will be doing playing 12 hours of pop music in aid of ActionAid's Ireland's Gaza appeal from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Thursday, December 7th as well. So let's have a chat with Louise about the Britney book. So listen, we've all read or listened to the new Britney book, The Woman in Me, and I'm interested to get Louise and Andrea, both of your perspectives on, especially Louise, yourself as first and foremost a fan, but then as a journalist as well and writer. I just think here is a woman we've talked about before on the podcast who, and we've talked about the perception and the things that have been thrown at her and how the media perceived her and how they treated her with the Britney documentary from a couple of years ago. But now we have her in her own words. I mean, do you find you learned a lot from this? Is there a lot of things that are surprising to you? Are there a lot of things? For me personally, I found it fairly eye-opening in terms of the harrowing nature of what she's been going through since pretty much her entire career.
Yeah, I think like everybody, we are given the level of background that we just never really got before. Firstly, because she's giving her side of the story, which she kind of famously has never done. Like, she, when her and Justin Timberlake broke up, there was very little said by her or her team. And he was then able to have like loads of songs about her. And actually, like a fun fact, the song Sweet Dreams My LAX, which Rachel Stevens released as a single, was written with Britney Spears in mind as a retaliation to Cry Me a River. But she was like, no, I don't want to kind of get involved in that sort of tit for tat thing. But then she ended up releasing Every Time, which is a line from the song, is this song is my sorry. But I think it's the background. And I know we've all read about the conservatorship and we've all heard about it and we've all heard about Free Britney. But sometimes I think that those words and those like hashtags, we don't really understand what that actually means. And more than half the book is dedicated to the conservatorship period. And it, when you get into the day to day of how it limited her life, how she says it kind of made her regress into being a child again, like it's so like warped, it's so horrendous that this happened to someone who was just depressed. She believes she was suffering from postpartum depression after having two babies in very, very quick succession of each other at a very young age. She was about 24, 25 by the time she had the two of them, and never been given a break. Yeah. Like, I think that is the biggest thing. Like, there's so many points in the book where she's like, all I wanted was a break, and she was never granted that. So of course there'd be so many things that would build up over just how monumental her initial breakout was, to just this escalating kind of rise of superstardom that we haven't really seen since. And probably won't again, because this kind of celebrity, I think, is extinct now. This multi kind of dominant force, because we've so many different ways of consuming entertainment now that there's no way that we can kind of get sick of a pop star. And I mean that with love. We can't get sick of pop stars in the way that we used to, because we now have a choice to switch to another stream. We've a choice to just like log off. Whereas back then, everybody knew about Britney Spears. And Britney Spears had to deal with being Britney Spears at the level that annoyed or kind of entertained us as well. So my main takeaway from that book is that woman has the strongest will. Even though like it faltered a lot, I just can't believe she's still alive. Like, for the last half of the book, I'm just like, how did she get through this?
Yeah.
And a lot of it came down to her just persevering.
Yeah, she talks about a bit one of the times when she's hospitalized that she looks back on it now and she thinks that it must have been God, that it can't possibly have been herself that got her through that. And like, that's a bit of a testament to, like, when you're reading it, it is literally unbelievable what you, and you're so right in saying that when we understand, like, we talked a lot about conservatorship and what it actually means legally on the podcast the last time you were on, when we were talking about the documentary and we were talking about Britney and what it actually means, and, you know, looking at it from a legal perspective, and no, she can't have access to her phone, and no, she can't control her finances and so on. But something that really struck me was her talking about how she was on a diet basically of, was it chicken and vegetables for 2 years? And tinned vegetables
chicken
for
and
2 years.
Vegetables.
And I nearly had to pause it and just sort of think about how long 2 years is. And she says it in the book. She says, you know, being on a diet that you're controlling, being on a, like a self-inflicted diet, anyone will know that that is like, it's all consuming. But someone else doing that to you and not allowing you to eat a burger or eat just anything else for 2 years, it's cruelty. Like, it's there was something about that part in particular. And, you know, there's all manner of other cruelties that were inflicted upon her as well, of course, but there was just something about that level of control that just made me think, like, these people should be in prison. Like, this is so much more than just getting Britney her life back and access to her children and, you know, control of her life again. It's like, well, where's the justice for all of this? And I don't know, it just doesn't seem like there is going to be any for that family, for that horrible, horrible family, for what they put her through. Like, it's awful.
Yeah, well, let's talk a bit about the specifics of what she reveals in the book before we get to maybe the aftermath, because, you know, it is, there's a lot to take in there. There's, you know, she starts talking about her grandmother who shot herself 8 years after losing her baby. She talks a lot about generational trauma stuff, about her parents and how they just had these things that, you know, meant that they weren't good parents at times. How she finds music and dance and how it becomes like, you know, her main solace and her main thing to escape with. And I think just the thing about the start of the book is pretty much, it's a kind of your standard autobiography. It's like, here, a famous person, how it starts to become, you know, a real thing. And then she's talking about Baby One More Time and her vision for the video and all this stuff. And you're like, okay. And I thought it was going to go more in that direction because I hadn't really read about anything about the book itself. So it was, when I did listen to it, which was the audiobook itself, which is read by Michelle Williams and with a brief intro by the author who does establish this by saying this is too traumatic for me to relive. I've already done this.
And it wasn't like, okay, so nice to hear her voice though. Like when I pressed play on it and I heard her, I was like, oh, Brittany, it is nice to hear you. Even if it is just for this introductory chapter, you know, it felt like a nice, that was a nice thing for her to read the first chapter, I think.
Yeah, and it's also really helpful because it just underscores the trauma and the stuff that is so difficult for her to come. And I think when you start to move through her career and as she starts to explain, you see, I mean, certainly the stuff we've discussed before in terms of how the media treated her, like going on Carson Daly and TRL and all that and having videos of people saying that you're not a role model and all this stuff and that you should be shot and all these things. We've covered a lot of that before, but I think from her perspective, it's just really interesting to hear her. She says, I never said I was a role model. I just wanted to sing and dance. And it was simple as that a lot of the time for her, you know, and I think it was really interesting then to get her perspective on the Justin Timberlake stuff first, because that is something that has been very one-sided. And I don't know how she managed it to keep herself, you know, even back then to not say anything, because really she was so wronged in lots of ways. And and it's so interesting, the double standard at play there, where he goes off become this, which is something repeated out the book with her relationship with men, is that they're seen as they're like these heroes. And then she's just the villain in the background who's left and who is scorned and all that stuff. Like, for the first thing that we learn about Justin anyways is that I didn't know, but was this previously known that he made her get an abortion and did it at home as well, and because he didn't want anyone to know or any paparazzi to know. And like, just absolutely horrifying that she was made to do that.
How old was she and he at this stage?
It would have been around 2003. So I think they had broken up.
Wow.
By the time she was 21 or 22.
So young.
Yeah. But I think with a lot of the Justin stuff and why we never heard her side of things in great detail was, I think she bought into this image of herself where she had to be, I know she denied it, but she kind of had to be a role model. She had to be kind of America's sweetheart. So she would watch what she would say. And I think part of that was just kind of like,
it's Southern values as well.
Don't bother saying anything at all. Even if Justin, she has such a strange and persistent kind of set of manners. Like, I don't know if you ever listened to when she did her kind of her disposition at the court hearing in 2021, and the whole time she's just referring to the judge as ma'am, and she's like, her P's and Q's, they're like completely in check the whole time. So I do think that she is at her very core
a nice Southern girl, well-mannered, like, she describes herself. Yeah,
and so I think that she kind of kept quiet. And I think part of sort of the eruption in around 2007 or even before then, I think 2004 in my mind is a very key part of the Britney Spears story, because that is when she had to cancel her part of her world tour. the last date she actually did was in Dublin in 2004, the Onyx World Tour, because she had a knee injury. And it was also when she became engaged to Kevin Federline. And I kind of think she had this just sort of, she had a taste of reality then where it was like, hang on, I don't have to be treated this way. I don't have to kind of just lie down and take this abuse, take this criticism the way that I have been doing. And in and around that time, she gained access to her website. And I wish this had been in the book, but this actually happened. I remember like checking her website on a daily basis back in like 2005 to see what she'd be saying next, where she would log into her website. She was able to change like the interface and kind of give out to paparazzi, give details about herself, say that she was taking a break. She earned early retirement, this kind of thing. And she'd share poems that she wrote. There was like some poem about her being a tiger behind cages. And just she's kind of had this rebellious streak in her, and it had been subdued for so long that when it got to the point where she was fully able to tell her side of the story or express herself, it was just rage. It was pure rage. And that was what we ended up seeing that night, that she attacked a paparazzi's car with an umbrella. And that was rage from her career, rage from kind of deep personal criticism, but also rage against Kevin Federline, who she was in a divorce battle with, and he had fully prevented her from seeing her two babies. And she was like, she had nothing else to do, she had nowhere else to turn, so she just went out. And she's like, she's lucky, she said, I think in the book, lucky it was just an umbrella that I had. It's lucky that it was just his car. But like, that was probably her knowing that she can express anger, but only so much anger. But like, that's an image that's like burned into, I think, a lot of
And the context for that is so interesting. Like you said, like 5 months and 17 months her kids were at that point. And again, this like Federline takes advantage of her in terms of just underscores how, you know, kind of a, like a nice kind of a gentle person she is. She was just searching for love and intimacy and support, and he totally used her to launch his own bullshit career. And then the stuff about making her file the divorce paper so he doesn't look bad, but also so she has to pay the legal fees, stuff like that. It's just all there, and it's no wonder. It's like the context that we've never heard before for why that incident happened. I mean, you can understand it enough because she's been chased by the paparazzi, but to have that extra personal detail about like what is actually going on with her, she's like, they've taken away her kids, and that extra context as well, and pretty much like has very few friends. What's her friend's name? Is it Felicia in it that she talks? Yeah. She talks about like
Felicia would have been a family friend who basically took over the role of her parents, because her parents, her father wasn't on the scene kind of at this stage, because Jamie and Lynn had separated or were getting divorced around the time that Britney was like really kind of rising to fame. And so Felicia would go on the road with her and she became her best friend, her guardian, her everything. But like, I think like a very kind of key thing that I took on, and I assume that you guys did as well, it's like, there's nobody close to Britney. No. Like everybody who was kind of by blood close to her, kind of they betrayed her. It's very easy to see why she has no level of trust in her life, because everybody close to her has burned her for some reason, or they've used her. And it's such a detrimental thing to have trust in, to not have trust in your life, but to have everybody turn on you. And when she describes her wedding, which it didn't seem like she had any lifelong friends there. True. It was like Drew Barrymore and Selena Gomez and Paris Hilton, people who some of those people she had actually never met before. And it just, like, to me, she just seems to have had the loneliest life for a very, very long time, like decades of loneliness. And it was just because people couldn't remain close to her without taking advantage of her. And now if anyone is to get close to her, it's Britney Spears, the superstar. Yeah. You know, there's nobody really from before who's there for her. Because obviously she's had the fallout with her sister, and she says that she actually ends the book with kind of saying like, I know that I can have nothing to do with my family ever again. And she loved her little sister and she loved her older brother. And I know I mentioned to you guys in a text earlier on, I think that was the biggest heartbreak for her, because she always idolized her older brother Brian when she was growing up. And then in and around when she was separating from Kevin Federline, her brother kind of almost got this same sort of taste for personal fame himself. So he started developing this lavish lifestyle. And she was just like, oh God, there's nobody, like nobody's grounded anymore. Everybody who was in her orbit was now famous in their own right. And that just must have felt...
In the book, she talks about just so being overshadowing dumped by text for her. By Justin Timberlake, for example. And then, you know, I think that family stuff then starts to come into it where she starts talking about how her Jamie Lynn, I think she calls her a bitch, didn't know what we said.
Little bitch.
And then how she rules the roost at home, and she calls her, like Brittany says, she's a ghost in the house when she comes in. No one talks to her. No one acknowledges her. And she's like, what is going on here? Why am I... being so, like, she's estranged from her own family from early on. It's like they don't understand who she is. She's like this money making machine that they eventually latch onto properly and take her for all it's worth, really. And then I think that's interesting then, like, the only other person she talks about that I can think of from the book is Madonna as a role model. And now it can kind of make sense now, because you're like, here is a strong headed woman who's been doing her making this work for her in her own career, in charge of her own career. And one of the ways in which Madonna seems to do that is as a necessity for her, for the longevity of her career, is be in charge of how she works things and have people bow down almost to her demands, because that's the only way she can control. And Britney sees that and goes, well, I'm kind of too nice for that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she kind of says that.
Yeah, like there's a great story from when they were filming the video for Me Against the Music, and the whole production was delayed because I think did Madonna have a wardrobe malfunction or something, and so the whole thing was delayed, and Britney was just like, oh my God, I didn't know that was an option, but like I could never do that either. And it is like, you know,
I would never make a fuss, basically.
I'll just take what's given. She didn't realize that she was the powerful person in the room. But whatever, I think there was, because she kind of grew to fame at a time when her family was suffering extreme financial burdens, she always felt like she had to do things for other people. I feel like there was a huge level of kind of self-drive that was always at the core of other people's existence. So she maybe never could ever believe that, oh, I can do all of this for me. I can call the shots. And then when she did start to do that, that's when the walls came down and her closest people began to portray her as crazy, began to portray her struggles as kind of aggression. And like that is just the most manipulative company that you could possibly keep, where your weaknesses are used against you. And because she was spiraling, people believed it and kind of went along with it. So like if we were to go back and like revisit 2007, because 2007 on the internet was a completely different world to it is now. It was a very cruel world. And Britney's mental health struggles were just like blatantly described as, oh, she's crazy again. She's off the rails. And never from a place of concern, never that she needed help. And a running thing that she says throughout the book is like, all she ever wants is somebody to hold her. And like that's physically, emotionally, or whatever.
Yeah.
She just wanted to be held, and there was
a big part of her
to do that.
Her not realizing that she can be the boss, whether it's on a music video set or of her own career. Like my theory is that a big part of that comes from the fact that she began her career as a child, you know, long before even the Mickey Mouse Club. Like even when she was first going to her auditions when she was young, when she was first learning to dance and learning to sing, there's when you're a child in those situations, you're constantly asking for permission from adults to be able to do the thing you want to do. And you have to be allowed to get up on stage and sing a song, and you have to be on your best behavior to get signed by a talent scout. And if that's how you learn that show business works, it's no wonder that you sort of assume that the adults are going to look after you for your whole career. Do you know that there are people who quote unquote know better than you do? And there's these, you know, she's surrounded by all these industry professionals and these record labels. And I think she just had, I wouldn't say the word is naive, but maybe it is. Well, it was a little bit of a naive assumption that the people around her had her best interests at heart when it came to her career, when they very, very clearly didn't. But I think a huge part of that is when a child enters into show business without developing, you know, the skills to be able to say no to long working hours or to draw boundaries between what you want to do and what you don't want to do with your, like when she talks about, I really liked how she talked about the Baby One More Time video and how she was contributing a lot of the creative ideas to that video. But, you know, a part of me hears that and thinks as well, you know, that's not control, Brittany. That's still you being allowed to do something. If the answer to that was no, it wouldn't have happened, you know? And yeah, I think that it was a horrible and unjustified wake up call for her when she realized that people don't have her best interests at heart, especially people who can make money from her. You know, it's just such a horrible industry. And we've talked a lot on the podcast with Brittany and with others about, you know, children becoming pop stars, 16-year-olds becoming pop stars, and how much you just worry about them. And I think that Brittany is, you know, she's the platonic sort of ideal that you think of when you think of of what happens when you become famous so young.
I think if you read this book as well, you actually are shocked by the level of toxicity and treatment of her family, especially her parents, over and the control they have over her. Like I described earlier on, like whatever happened to Baby Jane levels of like insanity in terms of control and looking after. Like she's the cash cow, and they took the conservatorship, allowed them to take over. But just like, and then she talks about, I think it was a couple of like details like this that I really like helped me appreciate her as a regular person first, and the contrast between that and the control they had. Like she talks about mundanely keeping receipts for tax purposes that she went through every week, and then her dad comes and takes over her study. And like some sort of Lifetime movie villain says, I'm Britney Spears now. And you're like, what the fuck is going on here? And then talks about her mother and how she wrote a book about how horrible like her daughter was being. And like, it's like, where's the empathy here?
I was absolutely fuming through that section where she's talking about, because I didn't know her mother had written that book. I didn't really know much about her mother going into this. I knew a lot more about her father, because he was the kind of the main person that you're talking about when it came to the conservatorship case. But her mother writing that book about Britney going off the rails and going on morning television and promoting it. And she says in the book something like that she'd tune in and accidentally see her mother, and she'd be like, oh yeah, and this is my daughter, and she's married now and she's pregnant, and you know, she's only 17 but she's married, and this is my son and he's this and that, and this is Britney, and a kind of an eye roll, like she's the bad child, as though anybody would be interested in your story if it weren't for Britney, as though anybody would pay attention to you if it weren't for Britney, you know. It was just such an ungrateful, like, I just can't imagine a mother treating their child like that. I was fuming during that section. I felt it even in the way that Michelle Williams was delivering that part of the audiobook. She really sort of got across a sense of rage and a sense of anger, you know. And that's another thing about it, is that Britney Spears talks a lot about being angry in this book. And that's, I think, really welcome. I'm like, yeah, girl, be angry, like, and write about being angry. And she communicates it really, really well. But yeah, I was furious during that whole section. Do you remember that, Louise? Like, do you remember that sort of thing happening? Because I've no recollection of the mother.
Yeah, fully. Like, there's just so many... See, this is why it's so great to get her side of it, of things, because, you know, we the Britney Spears fans would have followed, like,
in the community
would have been following everything that was happening to her. And like, I have long believed, like, before the true conspiracies came out, the conspiracies that end up being the truth, before they came out, I long believed that somebody was sabotaging her career, because there's multiple music videos that exist, or there's like a lot of footage that exists of kind of performances that she's done, and the worst footage is the one that's officially released. Or Joe, the fact that her most critically acclaimed album, she actually like co-produced. She was the one who was, that was Blackout in 2007, and it was at that point then, after that, that they kind of like pulled her back in, and she wasn't allowed to make any kind of creative decisions from that point on. And the music suffered. Like there are some bad songs on a lot of her albums post Blackout. There's some great ones, but it's music that could be for anybody. But when she was the one who was kind of leading kind of the choices or leading the direction, it was completely her. It sounded her. It sounded strange. It was more underground kind of leanings. Whereas like I'm just going to think of, there's a great song on the album Blackout called Toy Soldier, and it's her completely warping like her southern accent and really leaning into this sort of like southern kind of white redneck kind of vibe to it. And then there's a song on Femme Fatale called I Wanna Go, and that could belong to absolutely anybody. It's neither here nor there. And I can only imagine just how difficult it was for her, because she mentions at some points where I think that she's saying, because she collaborated with Will.i.am a few times in her career, and she's like, we made one good song together. Like, Joe, she knows herself what's good and what's bad. And there was the Gimme More video. She says in the book, she's like, I'm not happy with that video. Like, that it looks so cheap and it looks so bad. And there is actually an alternate video that exists that is so much better. It's definitely on YouTube. Like, she looks brilliant. There's a story to it, whereas the official one that's released is just kind of like, who let her into like Tesco to
swing
around?
On a pole as well.
It just looks so...
Yeah, it's completely purposeless. Without purpose. Or if you were to be like conspiratorial about it, it's nearly designed to make her look a bit, I don't know, unhinged or disheveled or something. You know, she's not the Britney that people are used to, and you know that idea is problematic in itself. But yeah,
that was the intention, because her father would have been conservator after that point, but I think the people in her camp kind of, I think a lot of the people who were officially on her team were influenced by her family, maybe more so than Britney at this point, because they wanted to follow the money. So if they felt Britney was unsteady, why would they trust her decisions? And I think a great story that we got that kind of explained the disaster that is her 2007 VMA performance of 2007, when she said there was like wardrobe issues, her hair wasn't right. Oh. She ran into Justin Timberlake backstage and she hadn't seen him in so long. Sarah Silverman had said something like, the two biggest mistakes Britney Spears has ever made are her like babies. So she had to hear all of that before she went on stage, and she said she was like sobbing, crying. And I think that Britney, over the course of her career, has taught herself how to dissociate. And that is what we're seeing when she's doing that performance of Gimme More on stage. And it definitely as well kind of comes into play when one of the many times that she's hospitalized against her will, she says that one of the hardest things for her to have done during that time, apart from the endless hours of therapy, having to give blood almost every day,
They took her blood pressure three times a day.
Yeah, been prescribed lithium, even though she was adamant that she shouldn't take lithium. She said that she was able to look out a window and see everybody coming and going. And I think that was her life for days on end, where the only thing she had to do was look at a window. Like, I don't think she wasn't allowed to have a phone. I think she was only allowed to watch like an hour of television.
Yeah, she said 8 p.m. till 9 p.m. Yeah, she watched.
Yeah, and then she had to go to bed. Like a grown woman, like nothing was her decision.
So and she says she'd get up every day and say, what are we doing? She'd have to ask other people, what are we doing?
She doesn't drink coffee.
Oh.
But like, isn't it just, it's like something out of the 1950s horror.
Yeah, it is.
But another thing that I couldn't get over was the level of control that her father had in the end, and where he could just decide that she was misbehaving and then throw her into a mental health facility.
Yeah, that's insane.
One reason was she was taking energy supplements. Now, I know America is a different world. Their CVSs have higher, like it's, you know, you could get things over the counter there that you would have to, I don't know, have to beg, plead, I don't know, get a dealer for. So I don't know what that means when she says she was taking energy supplements. To me, it's Baraka.
Yeah, to yeah. So other people, it could be ketamine.
Yeah, or B vitamins or something. You know, like it could be.
So she was caught with energy supplements and her father was like, absolutely not. And she just wasn't allowed to take them. And, you know, she would need, she would need a Baraka for the level of performing that she was doing. The
and she's
level
on lithium.
Energy that she needs to do, like, professionally. Yeah, exactly.
Which
you
point
needs,
out is the same drug that her grandmother was put on as well all those years
yeah.
ago.
Exactly. This is a mother who killed herself with a shotgun. Like it is grotesque. There's actually a brilliant piece on vulture.com and it's all about the history of Jamie Spears's family and just the long history of women being punished in that family for being emotional. And it's funny that even the word emotional, if you say it now, it means something different to what we would have said 10 years ago. Mm. Someone 10 years ago was emotional, they were uncontrollable. Someone who's emotional now, we're like, okay, we need to help them. It's crazy how different the world is now and how differently we look at kind of mental health and the way that we talk about people. and I am aware that I just use crazy to describe something, so I retract that. But anyway, but the other thing was, in the lead up to the announcement of her second Las Vegas residency, the what was it, the domination tour or the domination show, she was put into hospital again because she was they were in kind of dance rehearsals and a dancer was showing a move that they wanted Britney to do and she's like, oh no, I can't do that anymore. Just like a kind of athletic dispute, as in like my body can't do that anymore, I'm not 16. And she was pulled, the room went quiet, people were whispering to each other, and then she was pulled out and put into hospital because she was being seen as difficult. Like, she is turning 42 this year. She has every right to be like, my body isn't the body that you knew from when I was a teenager or a 20-year-old, and that was enough for her to be hospitalized against her will. So you can only imagine how much she felt she needed to shut up in her day-to-day life. And I think a great thing that she described, so when she was doing the Piece of Me residency, which is the Vegas residency that actually went on a world tour as well, I saw it twice, in Brighton and then in Dublin. And when I saw it, I was just like, I'm just so happy she's okay. Like, okay is like the loosest of terms, but I remember at the time people been like, oh, she can't dance, this is terrible, blah blah blah. But like the true fans were like, yeah, of course, this has all been done against her will. Like, we knew so much of this was being done against her will, but we just kind of wanted to see that spark in her eye. That was as much as we were looking for. But when she writes about that period of time, she kind of just really lost herself, I think, for a while, and she kind of stopped trying. She was still performing, but her way of kind of retaliating, and I think that this is great because when you look back at videos or footage from this period, she's just like, I didn't move my ponytail, I didn't swish my hair. And that's what people want when they see Britney Spears perform. They wanted to see do some serious hairography. And she was just like, I didn't move my ponytail. Yeah. And like
specifically says, like, that's what men want to see when they see long blonde hair. They want to see it swish around, and she wouldn't do it.
So there are times in the Piece of Me tour where she, like, you're just like, oh my God, the choreography is amazing. She looks great. She's fantastic. She's giving it her all. There's a glint in her eye. And then there's a phase then when it all just drains and it's nothing. And you then read the book and you're like, oh, that's that period of time. Like, it's just so interesting.
Which period of time did you see her during?
It was the end of the tour. It was the end of, so she did the world tour just after residency was ending. So it would have been August 2018. So it would have been just 5 months then that she was put in, late after that she was then put into hospital. Because she was promised that after the Vegas residency she could take a break, but then they're like, oh no, you have to do a world tour. And then she was promised she could take another break then, but then they're like, oh no, you've signed another contract to do another show. So, you know, she did not want to be there. Yeah, she did not want to do that world tour. And a thing that we kind of noticed was, like, when we saw her at Brighton Pride, she didn't know where she was. Like, she, the dancers had to be like, you're in Brighton, say hello Brighton. And like, she'd completely zoned out, and understandably so. If you were to look at that with no context, you're like, she doesn't even care. But then it's like, she actually doesn't know what's happening, because people are signing contracts behind her back and telling her she's not well enough to do this.
Well, she's on lithium, she's disassociated, like you said. It's all happening inside, and she's just like, well, the only way I can get through this is to just like pretend I'm somewhere else, or like not think about this too much. And
just, she talks about as well, saying the only way to get through the conservatorship, I don't know why I struggle with that word so much, was to basically be a good girl. And she was just thinking of her children the whole time, and, you know, gaining access to them. And she says, it's really heartbreaking, when she said, she's like, I thought that if I gave them what they wanted, they'd see that I was being good and they'd set me free. And like, of course they didn't. Like, it's, that's not how, that's how somebody with your best interest at heart would react, and they would want you to get better. But your family don't have that, you know. It's so, so, so deeply sad.
But she also believed them. Like, she believed she was a bad person, because she had been told so many times by her family that she was. So she actually believed it. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think people currently are still so hard on Britney when they talk about her Instagram.
I do too. I don't understand that.
And I'm like, just let her. She has no idea who she is. She has basically been under control of every element of her life and been criticized so harshly. Like, we, in all of our personal lives, can probably pinpoint one comment or one criticism that has completely kind of rocked our confidence. Whereas she's had a lifetime of that, and she's had a lifetime of being perceived a certain way, been told to present herself a certain way. She said that she needs to learn who she is. And I think that also the greatest kind of like finger up to the world is posting these photos where she, it's just like her, completely, completely unfiltered. But I also do think that there is an element of her trolling.
I think so too.
Because she has famously over the years trolled paparazzi. And there is, like, she's, I think, a lot smarter than she lets on sometimes. And I think that book, the book proves that there is huge intelligence there, huge emotional awareness. And the fact that like so many of the photos aren't actually chronological, a lot of them are like throwback to Hawaii last year. She put up some photos recently, videos recently, as in like in October, that had Christmas trees in the background. So like, you, all of the videos and photos she's posting, you've no idea where they're from. And I think that's part of her being like, you're not going to actually know what's going on in my life. Like, you today, you don't know what I look like. So I think that that's sort of like another part of her power, where she's sort of withholding how she is and living right now, because that's her business. So maybe she's just keeping her Instagram alive by posting all these throwbacks. And I kind of think, yeah, more power to you. You do
I see
you
people
want
sometimes on my TikTok coming up who are probably left over from the Free Britney movement, but maybe people who continued to hyper focus on whatever information they can get from Britney. I'm interested in whether you've seen any of this, but people kind of zooming in on videos that she posts and saying like, oh no, look, the pixels here are strange, or she's clearly in front of a green screen, or she's looking off to like the side of the camera. If there's one thing Britney's going to do, it's not look straight down the camera, like at all times during her videos. And like, she will look off to the side and she'll look a bit like there's somebody behind the camera. And there's a lot of, I think you could call them conspiracy theories about like why she is that way. I'm curious if you've seen them, how you feel about them, and are these people kind of left over from the Free Britney movement? Meaning, do they have very good intentions and have been proved correct on a conspiracy once before? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so Free Britney was a conspiracy theory that was proved true. And people believe that she was posting against her will, which ended up being true. And she communicated with fans through the color of her clothing. She communicated different things through the way to certain kind of framings of photos that ended up being true. And just so unbelievable that it was this kind of, it just this conspirational behavior was true, and it freed her. It freed her from like just her whole life. You couldn't write it, and her kind of emancipation from herself, you couldn't write it. So I think there is room for conspiracy again, because it is hard to believe how Britney can live. And I don't mean that in a kind of a life or death way, but how can she exist in a world that has never granted her any kindness, any grace? And now there is one video that I was just like, oh my God, this is a green screen. So I'd never seen it before, and I'd kind of always dismissed it, and I was like, oh, Joe, it could be true, but it could be true. But I think that this is maybe just a level of protection that she is doing. And like, it's just such a funny thing where people are like, oh, she needs to go back under it again. I was like, no, she doesn't. This is why the conversation around mental health is so difficult for some people, because true mental illness is incredibly difficult to watch. Recovery is difficult to watch. Recovery is difficult to explain. She is experiencing levels of trauma that we will never, ever, ever, ever understand. We've been given a tiny insight into what that is in this book. I feel like she has another book in her, because you know, there's a huge kind of, I feel like the book kind of does overlook a lot of her huge cultural milestones. And I feel like there could be a lighter book in her about being one of the world's biggest pop stars, being the biggest icons that we've ever seen, the biggest icon since like Coca-Cola. So I think that her recovery needs to be hers. And I do wish that a lot of the fans would just kind of ease up, because it's very hard. If she's in having a difficult recovery, and if she does see any of these comments, that could completely throw her off. But it doesn't mean that she should have her liberties completely taken away from her again. It should never get to the point where people think she needs to be hospitalized because she's taking energy supplements. Yeah. It should, like, so she needs to be making her own decisions. And I think another sad element to her life now is that she just doesn't have a support network. And how do you develop that? How do you develop that as an adult? Like, that's something that we've all battled with. How do you make new friends when you're an adult? How do you make new friends when you're Britney Spears?
And not like just friends, like, I don't know. So people who care for you, people who are helping you with recovery. And
yeah, and again, she probably has a very complicated relationship with therapy, because so much of it was forced against her will. And she has said that she goes to therapy now. But, you know, why has she got any reason to trust a therapist when therapists have been working against her as well? So we've never seen anything like this, or nothing like this has ever happened to actually be proven true. Like, so many other like pop stars, movie stars, teen stars from the past, we've never had the clarification that like that definitely happened. But with Britney, we have. And I don't, it's a unique case. And
that's so true about the Free Britney movement, that it's nearly, you know, bigger, it's stranger than fiction, that it was all right. Because if you were to look at it at the time, and I remember it kind of happening, and I remember sort of thinking like, I don't know what to think here. Do you know, like, it all felt a bit too, a bit too easy. Like, is she sending secret messages? Is she really trapped against her will? You know, is it really as horrible as her fans, as these like super fans are making it out to be? And I was really like, I was suspicious of the Free Britney movement, unfortunately. And then when it all turned out to be right, I'm like, oh my God, like this, you know. And I felt awful for having that suspicion, but I also think you can't really be blamed for it either, because you're like, this is all a bit too, it's like something from a film or like from a book or something,
usually
you know.
The reality is more prosaic than the fantastical.
Well, you know? Yeah, it's that thing of like the easiest or the right answer is always the easiest answer. And the easiest answer at the time for me was that maybe something's going on, but not nearly to the level that these fans are saying. But not only was it to that level that, you know, that we was revealed throughout the her being released from the conservatorship, but from the book, it's even more so. Like it was even more, you know, out of this world, cruel and maniacal and fantastical, and just like the levels of cruelty. And I loved when she mentioned the Free Britney movement, and she said, you know, she tuned in to her TV one day and there was people with Free Britney t-shirts talking about exactly what was happening to her. And I was and she says like they saved my life or something like that. And I was so happy that she has grace for
that.
Yeah.
She discovered that.
She says a nurse told her.
That's right.
A nurse who showed her.
Yeah.
So these people who were also like treating her, who could have been complicit, but mm-hmm. were like, hang on. So it's an amazing interference that probably changed the route of her entire life. And, you know, and it is really, really remarkable. That there are, you know, like, I know she brings up God as well, but like she could see this as a sign. She probably sees that nurse as like an angel. It was just that moment of grace that she
desperately needed, and it would go on to just change her life forever, because it would have been so easy for her to just not find out that this was happening. And
well, like there's incredible, I think it was in her disposition as well. There were things, when COVID was happening and she was in her house, she wasn't even aware of the level of lockdowns or of when people could leave. So she had been led to believe that she still couldn't leave her house and then her mother would come with a fresh manicure. She for a while was completely kind of just locked away from all sense of reality or normality. And like even... like I've always thought that those kind of fashion show videos she posts on Instagram, that's her social life.
Yeah.
Do you know? And the clothes that she buys, they're never mad designer clothes. It's always...
She says that in the book. She's like, I could never dress myself and I still can't, but I like having fun.
Likes having fun. And then I do think that part of it is it's sort of a fuck you, where she's just like, let me have my silly videos. And... Let her do whatever she wants to do now.
Even all that other stuff, that all the horrible stuff she had to deal with, and then the conservatorship, and then not being allowed, being denied her own lawyer for that long, and then being given, she's very diplomatic, like her court-appointed attorney of 13 years, Samuel Ingham, who says, never been much help. You're like, well, clearly he'd never been much help. And you kind of wonder, like, you wouldn't be surprised if the family had been, like, paying him off or something like that just to be absolutely shite at his job, because it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the level of basic information that was denied to her, or maybe she'd been so manipulated into thinking that she can't ask for anything for herself anymore, that all of this came not just from the nurse kind of just being like, by the way, do you know this is happening? She called 911. That's how Britney Spears got out of this. She phoned the police. Yeah. Like, and to think, because she would never have really had access to a phone before. And like, just think about that. She didn't have a phone. Yeah. She wasn't texting people. And if she did, her phone was monitored by her father. So someday she managed to get a phone. She managed to make a phone call and she called the LAPD. And that is how the Free Britney movement kind of became an online conspiracy.
For us, like thinking about any situations where we've had to call the police or the emergency services in, like us as kind of normal people leading normal lives, it is at a point of desperation. It's not a phone call you make if there's any other solution. There's a point of desperation that comes where you're like, well, this is actually completely out of my hands and I need help from professional people. There is a wrong happening here, or a wrong has happened, you know.
Yeah, well, also her realizing that this was illegal, that, you know, crimes were being committed against her, that was maybe what the wake-up moment was for her when she heard about Free Britney, was that, oh, this isn't because I deserve it, this is not just. And I think that this is why I do think that there will be another book in her, because this was sort of almost like the kind of the word vomit of everything that happened. And I think kind of in a few years' time, when she sort of has kind of rebuilt kind of trust, her confidence, like, I don't think she's going to perform again, but I do think that she will be someone who is in control. Like, that could even be something where, like, she could be like a director or something like that. I think there is something where power needs to be in her hands. And I think that that is the best way forward for her, where she's the boss.
Ultimately, and totally. Yeah. And she talks about as well, just how basically it was her family's greed or like their true colors that really showed her that she really needed to do that, go the extra distance and like make that effort to break out of this, because her dad was basically like hitting or shaking her 13-year-old son after a disagreement. And she's like this, and a police report was filed and for a restraining order, right? So he's like, it's okay. He was like, right, my kids aren't safe. Never mind, it wasn't her safety, even though she had gone through all of that stuff for 13 years, I think, under essentially house arrest almost, and like, or work arrest, essentially being told what to do. And it was only when her kid and she, at 13 years old, was threatened by her dad, she was like, no, this really has to change. And fair play to her, she made it happen, like, very, very difficult. And it could have, we would maybe never have heard of this if it hadn't have been for that.
Yeah, and another amazing disruption that she did, like, just these, because she had such limited freedom, and the moments that she would have freedom, I think she did incredible things with it. So when they were announcing the Domination Las Vegas residency, that never happened, there was this huge event in Vegas. It was, they had like morning shows there, Mario Lopez was presenting, huge firework display, dancers, Britney arrives on this kind of huge kind of staircase, descends, she's meant to do interviews when she gets down there explaining what the tour is about, and she just keeps walking and nobody knows what to do. And even Mario Lopez is like, huh? And that was her being like, I don't have to do anything that you forced me to do. So she found ways to communicate when she couldn't speak. And like, I think that like, again, kind of what we said at the start, like, I just admire her will so much. And when she had lost that, she found new ways to kind of display it and to kind of build it back up, to find out who was and wasn't on her side. So like, that, I think it was the last few chapters were just so harrowing. And I just think that she is the strongest person. And I think that she's someone who will be able to share her strength, because already, and she mentions in the book as well, that she's hoping that she can kind of change how conservatorship or guardianships are changed. Like, she's aware that this isn't about her. This is about other people who don't have the finances that she has, don't have the platform that she has. So I do think that there'll be big changes in the legal system because of her. Like, the state of California, she says.
I'd love if she could sit down and have a chat with Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, because he was in a very similar situation with his career, he was kind of under guardianship of his manager and was drugged for decades of his life, and, you know, got free. And just reading Britney's story in her book, I thought of Brian a lot, and I just thought of how much in common they have now that they have this freedom. And, you know, Brian has been touring a bit, and I saw him a couple of years ago do Pet Sounds, which is just incredible. But, you know, he's there in body, he's there in spirit, and we're all very happy to see him. And that's the sort of concert you're going to, you know, and I think that's fine, as long as he's having fun. I would love if the two of them could sit down and have a chat while he's still with us, because their stories are, they've a lot in common with one another. And I think that I agree with you. I think that Britney's future, should she want it to be this, is in like changing the law, is in awareness raising and being an advocate, because if this can happen to Britney Spears, what's happening to people who aren't pop stars, what's happening to other women, you know? It's it's crazy. It's,
and even in the world of entertainment as well, just like these, you know, these high level performers who are doing hundreds and hundreds mm-hmm. and hundreds of shows. Miley Cyrus actually said something very interesting recently as to why she's not going on tour, or she doesn't enjoy touring. Is she's like, the level of ego is incredibly hard mm-hmm. to battle with, where it's having all of these people kind of screaming you, admiring every single move, and then having to yeah. go back to reality, having to be the ego to being yeah. bearable. She just found that too hard. So if you can only imagine what it's like after doing one world tour or two world tours back to back, that alone plays so much with people's yeah. sense of self, their identity, their mental health, their exhaustion levels, everything. So it's apart from all of the grotesque, barbaric things that have happened to Britney Spears, the level that she has worked has also wreaked mm-hmm. havoc with how she views herself and how she views her
and
place
it must
in the
have
world.
It must have been so lonely for her. Like, performing in that way is, I imagine, quite lonely anyway, but there's a chance for connection with your fans, at least while you're on the stage. But if you're there against your will and you're in this horrible situation constantly, and you go out on stage and it feels like all your fans are supporting the situation because they're happy because you're on tour, and they don't know, and you can't tell them, even though you're standing there with a microphone in your hand with all the power in the world to just kind of say, help me, do you know, but nothing would be done. It must have just felt so incredibly lonely for her. Like, it's a level of loneliness that I can't even fathom, you know. It's and helpless as well, you know. It's like, touring seems awful, like, just at the best of times it seems horrendous, you know. It seems like literally my idea of hell would be looking at what a touring schedule looks like, and the amount of planes you have to get and buses and all the traveling you have to do and all the work you have to do, and to do all that while this is happening, it's like it's unbelievable. And I think it's a special level of cruelty that they decided that because touring would have been more financially lucrative than releasing records, they chose to make her tour. Do you know what I mean? Like, making her record music that she didn't want to record would be one thing, but forcing her to do this tour, I think it's a special level of cruelty. That's just, it's unbelievable. Oh, poor Britney. I wanted to ask you, I mentioned it before we started recording, Louise. Jamie Lynn is going in to the jungle.
That one.
The timing is interesting, I guess.
The timing of everything that Jamie Lynn does is interesting. So Jamie's book, what was it called? My Side of the Story? Jamie Lynn released that just as the Free Britney campaign was kind of going to the courts. So that was also a very interesting time for her to decide to release a book. And of course, Britney was fuming about it because it was opportunistic and just ruthless. And there was no kindness to that. And there was no kindness in the book about Britney either. And then Jamie Lynn has blamed Britney's fans for her not proceeding in Dancing with the Stars in America. Couldn't be Jamie Lynn's fault. So, like, it's, I think that this is it's kind of tale as old as time in the entertainment industry of families of the cash cow. They try to find different ways to leech off that one person's success. And I think that this is it. It's, you know, shows like I'm a Celebrity will gladly take Jamie Lynn because people want the chaos, but I doubt she'll last very long in it.
I think especially not now with how she looks in this book, you know. She really, really comes across.
But like, how much is she going to be able to say?
That's true.
In the jungle, that's going to change everybody's minds as she's eating mealworm and.
But what's interesting with Jamie Lynn is that, like, there's, I think there is a there's a level of ignorance in the with the general public as to her, I suppose, role in Britney's hardship. I would never put her there with her father and her mother. Like, she's Britney's younger sister, and it is important to remember that she grew up as Britney Spears' younger sister, and that's its own thing. But as an adult, she hasn't been graceful or kind to Britney, to put it lightly. And I don't think the public know about that. I think a lot of people kind of, like, especially, you know, it's I'm a Celebrity, it's airing in the UK and Ireland. I think in the UK and Ireland, we don't, like, no one watches Zoe 101, you know, like, there isn't really an understanding of who she is as, like, a pop culture person, or who she, or whether or not she's involved in Britney's life. I think most of the general public are going to be like, oh, that's Britney's sister, that's nice, hope Britney's doing well. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it just feels, yeah, like, I'm like, because she was rumored a little while ago before I'd read the book, and I was like, oh, okay, like, that's obviously coinciding with the release of Britney's book, but fine. And then reading the book over the past couple of days, I've been like, ah, okay, I see now. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, like, I don't know what the motivation is to go on I'm a Celebrity, but I guess it's money.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's to develop a new avenue of fame. If
I
the
think
one that you
it will
have
be a new avenue
so
of fame. Yeah, it will probably be like acting, yeah, so, or something like that. Like, reintroducing herself as an adult to the celebrity world, and as an alternative Spears, one that is likable and who you can work with and is professional, and oh God, wasn't she great on I'm a Celebrity, and didn't she do so well in those tasks? And, you know, we've seen this, you know, we've seen I'm a Celebrity as a vehicle to like rehabilitate fucking Matt Hancock, and like, you know, it works as a vehicle to kind of rehabilitate people in the public's eye. And Jamie Lynn wasn't going to sign up for anything without knowing that that's the case. You know, I think I've really came away from this book as a hater of her. I'll say that.
Well, but, has there been any fallout from this book in terms of real world stuff since the revelations have come to light? Like, has Justin Timberlake responded to it? Probably not. Has anyone?
Well, apparently his team had to approve any mention of him. So what made the cut doesn't paint him in a good light. So you can only imagine what didn't get published. I know he. Apparently
I can't believe he approved what was published in that case.
He's apparently gone into hiding. And I know his NSYNC pal Lance Bass has defended him, being like, there's enough going on in the world, let's lay off Justin Timberlake. I was like, I don't know, let us dig into Justin Timberlake because there's so much going on in the world.
It's just because there's stuff going, I can't stand when people say things like that, oh, there's enough going on in the world. It's like, well, for Britney, there's been a lot going on for decades of her life, and a lot of that stems from Justin's treatment of her.
Yeah, but I think kind of from all of the reviews you've probably looked at of the book, they're all glowing. And I think that maybe a lot of people are having to reflect on, a lot of people in media, I think, will have to reflect on how they have spoken about Britney in the past and how they speak about other celebrities or people in the limelight. And yeah, I think that that's kind of one of the main things. Just, it was, I don't know if she's just a total outlier in this kind of, in the sense of regaining her narrative that has never been hers.
In terms of a modern comparison, I mean, another person I thought about a lot while I was reading the book was Kanye West, and how it is difficult to talk about people who have, who are suffering from mental illness, in ways that are often, you know, often involve saying and doing extremely offensive things, and that it isn't what we'd imagine to be, you know, a typical sufferer of, say, something like depression and anxiety, where those feelings are a bit more accessible to people. With Kanye being bipolar, I think the press has a much harder job of deciding how to paint that. And I don't think they have done a good job at all of that. And I think it's a very, very, very complicated situation. But I think that there'll come a time when we look at Kanye West now in a new light as well. So I'm obviously of the opinion that I don't think we've really learned that much from Britney. I think maybe what it is, maybe there's just an intersectionality that is missed out. I think maybe because a lot of these cases have been discussed, like Britney discussed, in terms of how we treat women in the media and not how we treat pop stars. And it's important to discuss how we treat women specifically, but it doesn't seem to have carried over into other pop stars. And Kanye is a black man and things like that, you know.
That we have maybe, as a result of this, of the maybe oversaturation or whatever, we don't really hear from Beyonce anymore. We don't really hear from Taylor Swift anymore. It's all in their music, which is the way maybe it should be. But there has been, doors have been closed on their side to protect themselves, because they've seen what happens when you're everywhere and your opinion is always kind of headline news. And that's kind of a, people in the limelight have become afraid of the media for a very good reason. And then for the people who actually enjoy kind of, you know, reading about art or reading about music, we suffer as a result of that. And it kind of removes an element of their artistry as well, where they can't get to speak about what it is that they're creating, because they're going to be asked about their ex-boyfriends, or they're going to be asked about kind of what they meant when they tweeted this. So I'm not saying that there shouldn't be accountability if they do kind of step out of the lines of what's acceptable and not acceptable. But the fact that none of them can even really speak about the work that they're creating now, I think that's a huge loss, and that's our fault as well. I'd love to hear more from Beyonce about how she creates, but we're never going to get that.
Well, only on her own terms.
And it's we'll get her films. We'll get this, we'll get the Renaissance film, and we got the Homecoming performance, and same with Taylor Swift. We got Miss Americana, and we're getting the Eras Tour in cinemas. And, you know, like, even in Miss Americana, Taylor Swift talks about how, like, it was in the notes that came along with the 1989 album, where she kind of put the Gaylor theory to rest somewhat, I think, where she says, you know, the press were saying that I had too many boyfriends. So for the 1989 album, the first time around, I'd just surround myself with women. And even then, that was sexualized and so on. So it's, I mean, not to go down the route of Taylor Swift, because I could talk about her for 48 hours straight. But, like, you know, I think that her sort of way of reclaiming her music has been really interesting. She hasn't, we know why she's doing it, but she hasn't talked about it, really. Like, if you look at anything Taylor has said about her, it's very, very little about the reasons why she's re-recording her music. Everything is inference and us learning about record deals and, you know, us becoming a lot more literate about what actually happens in the music industry. But she, it's all in her art, it's all in her music and her music videos and in her Easter eggs and so on. I think a large part of that is fear. I think you're right about that. Fear that she's going to be seen as like, I don't know, cash grabby or over powerful or
as I've said before, greedy. Do we really need more billionaires in the world?
Yes, we don't. We do not.
But it all comes back to control. And Joe, it's the same parallel that we've seen with Britney, we've seen with Beyonce, we've seen with Janet Jackson. Control is a very important thing for female performers. And I do think that it's very interesting as well that, say, like, Taylor is re-recording all of her material so she can own her masters. And then we see Bruce Springsteen and Justin Bieber selling the rights to their masters for millions and millions and millions. So it's just,
yeah.
I know Katy Perry has sold a portion of hers, but not the full kit. But I mean, who wants the full? Sorry, no, I take that back. I take it back. I'm not going to stand here.
I'd buy I Kissed a Girl. I feel like I'd make some money out of owning that. But
it is interesting to see what control means for different artists of different genres and different kind of legacies.
And different genders.
So control is incredibly important to the people who've never really had it. And the people who've had it unknowingly can just sell it for a few hundred million.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, on that, who owns Britney's masters? Do we know?
Wonder, probably RCA. And
I wonder, does she have any? I mean, I'd imagine she doesn't own a thing.
But she Fans most have of theories. Her money comes.
Okay, most of her money thank comes you.
Her, perfume. Like she's still one of the highest earners.
I wore that perfume a lot as a teenager.
They're great. Yeah. I have 2 bottles.
Okay, I will ask this year from Santa for a Britney perfume then to support.
Yeah, get
Britney.
Midnight Fantasy. That's the one that's tipped
up. You heard it here first. That is a Christmas.
If you smell Midnight Fantasy,
and my bottle is almost empty, so if anybody wants to get in.
Brittany wants to get in touch.
All right, we leave it there. So, guys, thanks a million, Louise, for coming back and talking to us about
thank
the
you.
Britney, book. Having you on, thanks.
This kitten got your tongue tied in knots, I see. Spit it out, cause I'm dying for company. I noticed that you got it. You noticed that I want it. You know that I can take it to the next level, baby. If you want this goodness, sicker than the remix, baby, let me blow your mind tonight.
Thanks to Louise for coming on this week again. Always good to have her and hear her thoughts on what's going on with the world of Britney and pop music as ever. And Andrea, thanks to you, of course, as well, for being here. And would you recommend the book to people?
I would absolutely recommend the book to people. It's very well written. It's very moving. It's difficult at times. But I was really, really, really impressed by this book from Britney. I would encourage Britney fans, certainly, but they've probably already read it.
Yeah.
But pop music fans more generally, I think, would learn a lot about one of the 20th century's and 21st century's most iconic pop artists. So 100% recommend.
For sure. For sure. And I think even it's quite a quick read as well, or listen as well.
Yeah, I'd listen to it within a couple of days. Yeah. I mean, I don't listen on listen on 1.5 speed when it's an audiobook. I don't for podcasts. I know some of you out there listen to us on 1.5 speed. This is for you. It's strange.
Say things really fast. Say things really fast.
But
that's like
yeah,
that
I
Alan
think
Partridge joke. I was watching Alan Partridge season 2 and he's like his Ukrainian girlfriend, he's like, if you speak really fast you can't understand what you say, say it. Talking to Lynn.
Oh, Lynn. Yeah, I think the book's probably, if you're listening to it, it's probably like five hours or so, if you're listening to it on like normal speed, so you can do the maths on speeding it up.
For
but
sure,
very, very good, and excellently read by Michelle Williams. Very, very good. And as we mentioned in the main bit of the show there with Louise, Brittany herself does read the introduction to the book, and it's very, very nice to hear from her. So
for sure. Okay, someone else it's nice to hear from is our Discord and Patreon members. And if you want to support us, it's patreon.com/909 where you can get access to playlists and the Discord, where a lot of people are a little crew of people are talking and meeting up and talking about gigs they're going to and other voices and all sorts of things coming up. So, yeah, nice place to hang out online. Come and find your crew. We're nice people. We're very nice people. Patreon.com/909.
And thank you to everybody who came to our Listen Closely event at the Big Romance. Yeah. We'll have more information next week on the next one.
Yeah, it might be announced before we have it out next week, but we stay tuned basically to 909 Socials, yep. And you'll hear all about the next Listen Closely album. We do album listening parties based off picking modern classics and talking a bit about them and then playing them on the lovely Toby Hatchett sound system. Our first one we had was Fortet's Rounds from 2003. Very interesting night to play that album and just to hear that album on those kind of lovely big speakers.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's only about 40 people who couldn't come in, so it's a limited small event on a Wednesday night. We're doing monthly going forward, so you'll hear about the December one very shortly. So that's it from us this week. Anything else you want to say, Andrea? Anything to impart? Any knowledge to impart?
No.
How many days to Christmas? No. All right. Let's just leave it there.
40
days to Christmas. 40, all right.
40
okay.
Or 41? I don't know.
Sorry.
That silence.
Sorry.
Keep that silence in because that was me trying to do maths.
Okay. All right. Nice one. Okay. Talk to you next week.
Bye, everyone.
You're listening to 909 Podcast. Bye.
Bye.